Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Did you survive the great tea spillage of earlier today?
It wasn't that great. It just mainly got all over the... I was standing up because I like to stand for clockwise.
I was standing today, too, yeah.
And I spilled it mostly on the mat I have on the floor. A little bit on my keyboard, but... You know, I have an old Magic keyboard, and I'm
trying to kill it.
Really good excuse. Yeah, really good excuse to get a new one.
Mm.
Although I like my old one. It's pretty solid. I think, yeah. I'll be holding on until they decide that they want to do like a touch bar in one or something.
I did lose I lost a keyboard like a year ago with a spill.
I'm so sorry.
But, you know, it's fine. I just got another one. You know, it's just, you know, I've got a keyboard tray on a top of my desk. And so despite all of the John Siracusa warnings about keeping your liquids at a below your electronics, it's just like, I'm not going to create some other location for my glass other than on my desk. So I'm just going to have to deal with the consequences if it happens.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've only lost, let's see, I think only one computer ever that's ended up with like a serious, I spilled some water on a MacBook Air once. And it, you know, right on the keyboard. So that's great, right? Because everything sort of, you know, sops down through it. I don't think, as I recall, like I did the, you know, I think it was a MacBook Air anyways. God, I have to think back and remember if it was that or an old MacBook. Either way, I did like the, all right, you know, turn it all off, turn it upside down, let it sit there for a while, for like a day or two. I think it was okay, except for, I don't remember if it was that one, it was the battery essentially, It must not have been a MacBook Air because I think I replaced the battery in it. Anyways, I don't know. That's the only time. I've only had one mishap, and I feel like it ended up being mostly okay, except for, you know, needing to replace, like, you know, something, an internal component. I can't remember if it was the battery on an old MacBook that was actually a replaceable battery, or if it was eventually the SSD in my MacBook Air, or if my first 11-inch MacBook Air died. But it was, like, way long after that mishap, as I recall. So I wasn't sure if it was related or not, and so I replaced it, and then that led to a whole hilarious issue where I had to take, every time I would, you know, do stuff in the MacBook Air, I unplugged the battery connector from the motherboard, and the ribbon cable got bent in such a way that it really didn't like staying in, and so every once in a while, it would just pop out, and the battery would stop charging or working. Which was extremely inconvenient, and I tried to fix it many times by putting like some thermal tape on it, and all this stuff. And I gave it to one of my cousins because it was, I replaced it eventually, and I gave it to her because she wanted a light computer to travel with. And then, of course, while she was in London for 6 months, it died. she took it to the Apple store so many times they told her to stop doing it because they wouldn't fix it for her anymore. They'd start charging her or something. So I think eventually I found a jerry-rig solution, which involved putting a piece of like thermal foam, adhesive foam, on top of it so that it the foam was thick enough that it pressed against the case and kept it in place. So I think that sort of solved it, but you know, it's now a six-year-old computer, so
yeah,
nobody wants to use that anyways.
Gotta love the jerry-rigging. It's just like nobody would ever choose to do that, but if you can get it to work, then...
Well, sometimes you just want to squeeze a little more life out of those suckers.
I agree. Yeah. I agree completely.
Yeah. It's harder and harder to do that these days.
That's true. That's true.
People just replace their computers instead. I never just didn't know what to do with the old ones because if they're dead, that's one thing. But, you know, if you've got a computer that's somewhat functional, just not very good.
Yeah.
I know people who hoard them. I know people, some people try to donate them, but a lot of places don't want them because they advance so quickly.
Yeah, I have to be honest. I use most of my computers until they're very old, and then I generally will just take them to the computer recycling facility. Yeah. I know. Yeah. I actually got a 2009 iMac that my daughter used for a while that was my, you know, that was our home computer in 2009. That's what we got.
Sure.
And you know, it's okay, I guess. And I put an SSD in it, but, you know, it's pretty old and not that fast. It's like a Core Duo or something, or maybe it's a Core 2 Duo, but it's I feel bad because the screen is fine, not Retina, obviously, but it's fine. But there's just it has no place here, and I'm not sure it's got really. I'm not sure I would inflict it on anyone either. I've thought about using it as like an emergency backup for my server if my Mac Mini dies, so I'm keeping it around for now. Mm. I've thought about using it as like an external monitor, but I don't really need an external monitor because I did think about that, like
very thin fish tank.
Yeah, a very thin for flat fish. Yeah. So it's just here, and at some point, I'll probably just let it sit here for another year, and then I'll be like, all right, out.
So I have a new solution for dealing with old Macs, which is I just box them up and send them to Stephen Hackett. Because sooner or later, he'll want them, right?
Yeah, sure.
He won't mind if I just start sending him old computers.
So I was in Berkeley yesterday, and the place that I walk to, so I have a meeting every quarter over there for NaNoWriMo because I'm on the board, and I park and then I walk. It's like a few blocks from where I used to live. It's actually pretty funny, but there's a computer repair store right on Shattuck. Mm-hmm. And every time I walk by, I look at in the window of this place is the volleyball, chrome neck iMac.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
You know? Yeah. I mean,
The lamp, the Pixar lamp style.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice looking computer.
I think of Back Stephen Hackett every time.
No. I guess, you know, we probably can't all send him our old computers. That would probably be, he probably wouldn't appreciate that.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I mean, lately, if literally everybody sent him their computer, that would be unpopular.
That is true, or perhaps too popular.
His little office space is not that big.
Yes, well, it's bigger than mine, I think. And I only have an old Mini and an old G3 sitting here. There might be an old PowerBook in here somewhere, lost in the vestiges of time. But such are the way of these things.
Yeah, but I am not one of those people. The only old computers I have in my office are, I have an Apple IIc, that I actually bought. Here's the thing is, I bought it as an indulgence of retro tech that I thought maybe I would use to see if any of my old Apple II floppy disks worked in 2000. So that's 16, you know, coming up 17 years ago, right?
Yep. Yep.
Oh my. Because it was like mid 2000, late 2000 when I did that, and I've got a my wife's Mac. I think it's a 512, but it's basically the original Mac look. I've got that, the one that she had in college. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. Do I feel regret that I didn't keep my PowerBook 160 or something like that? Sometimes I do, but you know, I have never really had a lot of storage space in the places that I've lived, and I still don't. And I just, the idea of keeping old Macs around, just, I don't know. It's just not a thing that I ever prioritize. I know people who do that, but it's just never been a thing that I've been that interested in. So, you know, on to the next thing.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, I've got some old, I've got the original iPhone, and I've got some old iPods and stuff like that, but they take up a substantially smaller amount of space than a Sawtooth Power Mac G4 or, you know, anything
right,
like that.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. Well, the trouble with those for me is always, maybe we've talked about this before, is always just like, man, there's probably some data I should rescue off some of these things.
Yeah. I have some hard drives floating around here that I've just kept around. Way. I've kept around largely because I don't know what's on them, and I don't trust to give them away.
I totally had a moment the other day, just yesterday, I think, where I thought to myself, you know, oh, I've got all these old disks sitting around, dry, all sorts of old data everywhere. And I always think to myself, well, you know, if you go years without using some of it, like, chances are you didn't need most of that data, right? And I think that's overwhelmingly the case. I almost never run into a situation where I need to, like, pull old data from things because most of my stuff is backed up. And this is going to be a sad story because in the end, it turns out that yesterday I realized I had accidentally deleted something probably like a year ago that like I was suddenly looking for. And this was This is of relevance to you because we were just talking about this over on the Incomparable. I was like, oh, I have that one old, I have one episode of the podcast that Lex Friedman and I record, not playing, that I never released because we recorded it and we never quite got around to it. And I realized that I had his side of the audio, but I never extracted mine from call recorder. And I must have just, because I just purged that folder every once in a while of all my call recorder recordings, I must have deleted it. But it was recorded in like 2015, so it was probably like almost two, like, a, you know, it was a two-year-old file that I must have deleted probably a year and a half ago. And I've suddenly realized I have that nowhere else. Oh. That was deleted. It is gone.
So your lost episode is truly lost now.
Well, I've had Lex digging to see if he has a call recorder file that has both sides of the conversation. But I think that is my only recourse because though this computer is backed up, it is only backed up, I think, via Time Machine. And from what I can tell, those Time Machine backups were long ago purged due to lack of disk space. So it has like recent backups, but doesn't go all the way back.
That is one of the advantages of some of the online backup things is that they back things up forever.
Right, right. And the problem is with those is often just that if you are maintaining multiple computers, do you back them all up and pay for storage space for all of them? Do you centralize all your data on one computer and then back that up? You know, so it's some of it is just data organization hygiene. And in general, I consider most of the stuff on my MacBook Air that's not in like Dropbox to be kind of expendable. Like, you know, I have a time, like I said, I have a Time Machine backup. So, but I don't have like a long-term archive for that because it's not intended to be sort of a computer where I keep things that I'm, you know, I keep single copies of things that I'm going to need and don't have anywhere else. Most of that is eventually backed up to my Mac Mini, which is backed up multiple ways. But this happens to be one of those sort of temporary files that I just normally, if I had produced that as a podcast, I would have had my audio extracted and saved somewhere else. But because it was in a folder that I purge regularly, I just forgot to, you know, consider that there was stuff in there that I might need at some point. And I'm sure I think at some point in the past few months, probably before I went to India, I needed the disk space. So I was just you know, erasing all that stuff because you figure it's temporary. You don't need it after that podcast comes out.
I do delete the call recorder files fairly regularly, and I have
had it take up space.
And I have had it happen where I'm more diligent now because this one time I had a podcast and people sent me their files and all of that, and I didn't collect them all in a folder and make sure they were all there.
Right,
and then,
exactly.
And then it wasn't a podcast I was doing anytime soon, but I needed the files. And it turns out that I had not copied my call recorder file and it, and then I deleted it and I don't think I had a backup of it. And so I ended up having to use my voice from someone else's file.
Yep,
I don't know. Which is just the worst. So yeah, backup. How? What can you do? I do it somewhere. So anyway, I have these floppy disks from the '80s still, and I have yet to actually I've had that Apple IIc so long that the project that I was going to do, I was going to mess around with and try to see if I could get to my old data. And I bought this thing on eBay and all that. That project was derailed by 9/11. Cause I was like in September of that year. I was gearing up to do it. 9/11 happened. And I just kind of put the stuff away and never got back to it. So I have no idea if 30-year-old, 40-year-old floppy disks are even readable, but I have them. I know where they are. I still have all of these floppy disks that I saved from my Apple II. And I still got this Apple IIc, although I have no idea if it's still functional or anything, cause it's just been sitting gathering dust for 16, 17 years now, after probably gathering dust for 15 years before that.
Right.
So I don't even know. Old tech. One of the things I like about the old tech stuff is emulation stuff. It's not retrieving old data. Old data is the problem. Old data on old storage devices, because like you get a SCSI hard drive. I've got a SCSI hard drive that probably would work with an old Mac, but I don't have the cables or anything.
Right.
And the floppy disks are an example of that. If you can get the data off, the way the Apple IIc thing is supposed to work is there's a program, there's an Apple II emulator, and it's got a basic program that you can type in that basically like makes a connection to the Mac by like a serial port adapter. And then on the Mac, once this connection is made, the program on the Mac can actually send, it basically types a more complex program into the Apple II, and that program will dump the data from any floppy disk over the serial connector into a disk image. Because the trick is getting the data out of the old systems. Because emulation is great, right? Like, I can run Apple II stuff on my Mac. I can run old Mac stuff on my Mac. I know, like, Steve Trouton Smith, who I see on Twitter all the time, has been, he's got, like, virtual machines of all these old versions of OS X. I know Stephen Hackett has worked on that too. That is the software side of it, is the other way to handle sort of like curating the past without having to deal with the fact that the old hardware is continuing to degrade, and you know, you can't get replacement parts or anything for any of that
well
stuff.
Even the data can be challenging at times. I mean, you can get some stuff out of it, but I was thinking just in the past week or so, I've had two instances of opening old data where the file essentially had to be converted. One was just last night. I was opening up an old movie file of a project I had made in college. And it was a .mov, right? Like, and you know, you think, oh, .mov, right? QuickTime should be able to open that. And it was, but it had to convert it. Like, it was using some sort of codec or something that was so old that it wasn't just going to display it without actually converting it, which was kind of interesting. I did not even occur to me that would happen. But, of course, you think about it, it makes perfect sense, right? It's a 17-year-old movie file. It's not like we're using the same technology. And the other one was I went to open an old short story file, and it took me a while to find it, but I found it, and I was like, oh, man. It's a .cwk file, which is a ClarisWorks file, which is actually technically probably an AppleWorks file, but .cwk was still the suffix used. And so the trick for that, maybe I should write a quick post on this just in case anybody's got AppleWorks files lingering around, is if you still have the old version of Pages from iWork 09, it can open .cwk files.
Oh, wow.
And then you can save it out as a new Pages file fairly painlessly, but at some point that Pages 09 will probably stop working, and so you will probably need to find a new approach for that. So either I need to go through and, I mean, I don't know how much stuff in there is actually worth saving, but anything that needs to be saved, I guess, needs to be opened in Pages 09 and then saved as a new Pages document. So that's exciting, because I have a ton of stuff that I wrote. I mean, AppleWorks was my word processor throughout college, and basically on until I don't even know, like, whenever it was discontinued, which was probably the mid 2000s or something like that. I wrote two novels in that.
And I never used it. I used Apple Works, or no, I used Apple Writer.
Oh, the way back
on the Apple II.
Yeah.
And in fact, I believe that was a text file based editor. So I think all those files are actually readable.
Stuff is like Binhexed or something. Like, I think you might be able to pull some stuff out of it, but all the formatting instructions in there, I think it's some sort of partially binary format. I don't know. It's kind of a mess. Because I've opened them before in like BB Edit. You know, you can open them and you can sort of skim through them, and there might be some text you can salvage, but you'll have to do quite a lot of reformatting and removing garbage in order to make it legible. I go back way back. I think MacWrite 2 was the first word processor I really used with any regularity. And then I followed that through ClarisWorks and AppleWorks. Old data can be tough at times, because sooner or later there's nothing left that remembers what format that's in. Especially from that era of the late 80s, early 90s, where everything was a proprietary format rather than just being like a text file or even something like RTF.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that for everything is, you hope that we've gotten better at it. And the fact is, for major formats, I feel like we have gotten better. But the fact is, there are also minor formats and weird formats. And I like all the intertext stuff I did in the 90s, you know, those issues are in plain text. Mm-hmm. And they were in PostScript, which is basically like proto PDF. And now they're in PDF because I converted them all. And although PDF is a weird thing, right? It's not human readable. It is, I feel like, so common that a PDF from 1995 will probably be openable in 20, 35, right? Because it's PDF is
standard.
It's that CWK file, right? Where you're like, whoa, like off, kind of off brand, not that common, super proprietary. And the company that made it dropped support for it after Pages 09, right?
Right.
And so now it's completely gone. Like Word is like that too, where you can, you can open really old Word files. And the Word format, if Microsoft ever, I think Microsoft's been a pretty good steward of that sort of thing. I think if Microsoft, you know,
it knows that's one of its strengths, right?
Yeah.
Is that it does boast that backwards compatibility.
And I think,
if it needs to do updating here and there,
if the time came where Microsoft was going to let go of what we think of as Microsoft Word, they would probably, my guess is today, they would open source like the translation engine for that or something like that.
Right.
So it's less likely that a Word file will be completely unreadable, because you should be able to at least emulate a PC that's running a version of Word that can open it. But still, Word is not plain text, right? Like all of the stuff I've written in Markdown is just text. And that means you should be able to get that out and read it in any, on any computer. That was actually one of the big things when I moved to the Mac from the Apple II, is that I had a 3.5-inch floppy drive on my Apple II, and that meant that I could stick those disks in the Mac and read them. And the ones that were all of those Apple Writer files, those are just text files, so they just opened.
Yeah.
I could just open them on the Mac, and that was great. So it's like, and I think, you know, MP4 videos and MP3 audios, right? Again, not human readable, but probably so common that all devices ever made by humanity after this will be able to read them.
At least for the foreseeable future.
I
have a similar old issues of the electronic magazine that my friend Jason Tosi and I did in our teenage years, which were after the first maybe few issues of it, which were done in, oh my God, what was the name? Do you remember what the name of this is? An old Mac app, classic Mac app, that where you could produce sort of documents that were in like a self, like an application essentially. Like it would turn into an app.
Oh yeah.
You would generate dot, was it like Doc Writer or something like that?
Yeah. I don't remember what it's something called. Something like that. Yeah.
So we distributed a few that way, and that was fine. But pretty quickly, fortunately, because of the era we were in, we moved to the very earliest version of the web. So most of that stuff's in HTML, which is again plain text with text formatting. So that also, you know, you can open an HTML document from 1993 right now with zero problems. It won't look amazing, but like you can easily get all the text out of that because it's structured, but it's all plain text still. So that's also, I mean, I think there's a lot of longevity in HTML and XML stuff because it's data that is logically organized in a way that can always be extracted by something else, even if there's nothing that's currently supporting it, right? Like even if you killed off everything that read HTML or XML files, someone could conceivably program something that could go through, understand, parse an XML or HTML document and pull the relevant information out of it. So as long as you have programming languages, you're probably fine.
We should mention the Apple results just because we did that yesterday, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
We listened to that call.
We did.
I feel like now I could write like a short play about the Apple conference call. Like, you know, the call, we're just waiting for a few other people to join, but the call will begin shortly. A play.
Yeah, this is it sounds like a Samuel Beckett play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tim never comes on the line, and it's just a lot of investor and analysts asking each other questions.
Yeah, and the classical music budget is enormous, although they don't do classical music anymore, but they used
all
to
Beats One or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but there's the lady who introduces the people, and then there's the lady who is in the room who is like the MC,
the boilerplate,
who's the investor relations, and she's the one who says this call will be archived on apple.com and you can call for a replay and blah blah blah. And then there's Tim and Luca.
And there's always other people in the background because a lot of times
you can hear
them.
Well, it's an orchestrated thing. I mean,
absolutely.
It is. I was saying on some podcast, like maybe it was Upgrade, that nothing they say is not planned. but they have like answers and phrases and things ready to go of what they're willing to say. If this comes up, this is what you can say, and they stick to it. So it can be illuminating because they are trying to give some level of illumination to the financial industry about Apple's stock and Apple's business and where they're going. But it's not, you know, they're not going to let anything slip. It's
funny though, because there are people, obviously we talk always about people probing for, you know, those rare slips or trying to get them to, it's like doing a text adventure, right? Like it's like trying to get them to do the response. Like, okay, I know if I combine these things, I know they have a certain number of strings, right? Like, and I know to get that string out of them, I have to phrase a question in just this way so I can get like the edge of information that they're actually going to give me. And every once in a while you run into edge cases where, someone yesterday asked like a really complicated question, and I actually heard for the first time, Tim's like, wow, that was a really good question. I do not have that information in front of me, which is fairly rare. They're usually like prepared to, if at very least, like spin it and talk about some aspect of it that may not be exactly what that person is looking for, but sort of nominally fulfills the question. But that was one of those rare instances where I think he understood exactly what the person was asking, but was realizing, we don't have that data right now. And it's not so much like we're not going to give it to you. It's just we're not prepared for that.
Yeah. It's almost like he thought they had it and then realized they didn't.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
It was like, oh yeah, we don't actually have that.
But and it was a little shorter than usual too. Yeah. It usually goes all the way to six and they killed it about 5-6 minutes ahead of that.
Yeah. I thought they'd have another question and they didn't. They ended on the iPad note, which was like the question that was the best. They actually saved the best for last. A lot of times they really get into the weeds of like OpEx and currency changes
and inventory channels,
you know, which is important, but I find boring because I'm only there for the product
we're
strategy
there for tech stuff, not for finances.
Yeah. And instead it was one of the analysts had the nerve to say, hey, that iPad number is really lousy again, what's up? And I felt like Tim had to give himself a pep talk. The end of that was like he started and he was like, you know, I still think that the iPad's got a good shot and all of that. And I'm like, wow, you're not bullish on it anymore, you're just hopeful, that's a change. And by the end he was like, but I'm bullish on the iPad. I'm like, all right, he got there. He had to get up ahead of steam about positivity about the iPad. And they called out a bunch of like, it was record sales to new people and record sales in China and record sales in India of the iPad. And that's why we think that there's a lot of, you know, and there are good arguments to be made there. This is the big debate, but I thought it was interesting the things that they had to pick out in order to try and explain why they were still positive about the iPad, given that sales have dropped for like every quarter for 3 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Gosh darn it, the iPad's good enough.
I mean, there was no new iPad since last spring, and that was the Pro. And so the ASP is down and the sales are down. It's not really surprising when you think of it that way. That said, I wrote on Six Colors last night, if you want to put it in perspective, the holiday quarter number of iPads that Apple has sold the last 4 years, so the quarter that includes Christmas, they sold 26 million, then 21, then 16, then 13. So in other words, in 4 years, Apple talks about how in 4 years they want their services business to be double its size. In 4 years, the iPad business has halved, right? It's the other direction. And that's revenue, or that's units, but revenue is down too. It is fair to say the iPad's units, the iPad sells more than the Mac, but the Mac is more expensive. So Apple is generating more revenue from the Mac than the iPad. But there are more iPad users than Mac users out there. I think that's probably true. Sure. And they sell more.
But there are open questions of, you know, what they're used for and how often they're used and people who have multiple devices. And I mean, I agree with you. I think that the iPad sales will eventually stabilize, like much like we've seen the Mac. The Mac sells between 4 and 5 million units a quarter, pretty much.
Like
clockwork.
I made a, because I converted a lot of those charts that I made yesterday to 4-quarter rolling average. But even if you go to the, I made one of the like regular sales numbers, and it's just a constant business,
right? It does not waver much.
It does not vary at all. Quarterly Mac sales, if you do the rolling average, it's like if you look over the last 5 years, that four quarter average does not really go. It varies between about 4.1 and 5.1 per quarter. Yeah.
And it depends on what's gotten released. But
the most idea of the quarters are 4.5 million max. I mean, that basically every quarter they sell 4.5 million max.
So I feel like the iPad business might hit that point. It just hasn't quite figured out what that number is, right? Like, because it was huge because it came out, it was new. As I'm sure, once upon a time, Mac sales were the same sort of thing.
That year where the iPad mini came out, and the Retina iPad, and that was like in 2013, people were like, yes, this is it. The iPad, we're into it. Let's do it. And I feel it's actually kind of like the 2015 that the iPhone had, where everything gets a little distorted because there's a moment where everybody upgrades, whatever they do. And that was it for the iPad. And it turns out that was not a new step of how many people are going to buy iPads here on out. Instead, it was everybody who ever thought about the iPad bought one at once. And then they had an iPad. And then you couple that with the fact that I keep hearing this from people, and they're not wrong. It's like, old iPads are still pretty great. In fact, other than even with the OS limitations and the fact that the screen's not Retina, the original iPad is still actually usable for a lot of stuff, especially if you're only doing basic web browsing and iBooks.
Yeah, I gave we gave my mom's to my cousin's kids, and they were still using it. I gave them my old Mini 2.
Yeah.
And that one, it has a lot of use still.
My son was using the original Mini last year, and he dropped it. Now he's got a Mini 2 that used to be mine.
I mean, it's but that's, slow, and that's the but iPad, it works.
The iPad 2 essentially is, in pretty, the iPad 1 not so much, but the iPad 2 is still kind of usable. And then if you get into the Retina models, the 3 and the 4, it's like, I hear from people all the time, are like, I still have an iPad 3 and it's fine. I mean, other than the fact that it uses the dock connector, so it's not compatible with any of the other devices I have, it's fine. And that's part of it too. So it's people buying the iPad who didn't know what they actually needed it for, and they don't need it for much of anything. And people who have their iPad and it's fine. And, you had this huge mass of people who bought them. So I agree with you. I think the iPad will coast down to some level. And what is that level is the big mystery.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it's probably a little, basically somewhere between 1.5 times 2x of the Mac market, just based on, cost, right? You talk, as you said, that Mac is more expensive. It does about between 4 to 5 million, roughly. I would imagine that the iPad might settle eventually in somewhere like the 8 to 10 range every quarter. But I guess we'll see. We'll see if it starts leveling off at a certain point, because it certainly feels like right now it still feels like it's bleeding a little bit from the whole people. We, despite all those, I think your rationale is spot on, but we just don't have we don't have evidence beyond the anecdotal to really back that up in any way.
Yeah, we've got three and a half years where there's been one quarter of growth year over year for the iPad. Out of 3.5 years, and it's not there. So I don't know. I love my iPad, and I think Apple is still working on and investing in the iPad. And I think they think in the long term it's important. I think strategically it is important for Apple to devices like that are going to be important and relevant. Not maybe for everybody even, but for a lot of people. Or this is going to evolve into what the true next generation computer is. I don't know, but it makes me sad. Honestly, it makes me sad mostly because I worry that Apple is going to deprioritize the iPad because the sales are so sluggish. And as an iPad user, I don't want that. And also, I feel like that would be really dumb, because I think the iPad actually would do better. I think one of the reasons the iPad doesn't have as much momentum as it should is that Apple took its foot off the gas with the iPad.
Yeah, there's kind of a chicken and the egg problem there, right? Does it sell less because Apple's not developing more, or is Apple not developing more because it doesn't sell as well?
Yeah.
And I think that there's probably a little of both, honestly. Apple has not done a major push on the iPad, since obviously iOS 9.
So we're hoping that that'll happen soon, that there'll be new iPads, and the rumors are maybe an iOS update that fixes the multitasking and all that. And I hope it happens. I hope it does.
Yeah. And the part of the problem with it is also just very tied to the iPhone. And there are definitely a lot of people, I think, who use both an iPhone and an iPad. But I can also see there are people who choose to, you know, pick one over the other for particular reasons.
Yeah, my issue, because I hear from people about whenever I write about the iPad, they're like, well, I don't use mine. And it's like, oh, well, good perspective. Thank you. That's one. Time. I'll add that to the tally. But everybody gets to have their thing. It's just like everybody, you know, it's fine. Everybody should choose what they want, but it doesn't really prove anything if like a person likes it or doesn't like it. It's just, that's the bigger picture here. I don't want to be too dismissive. It's just, you know, those are individual data points. You know, I don't know. It's got its uses and I hope they stick with it, because I do think that it is going somewhere, and it's useful to keep exploring wherever it's going. I don't know.
Yeah. I like mine. I use it. It's probably the least used of my Apple devices, but I still use it regularly.
So this is you reminded me of what I was going to say, which is screen size for me is the thing. It's like I have a hard time envisioning a world where, because people have said, well, the future of the computer is the smartphone. It's like, well, yes and no. Like, yes, in the sense that everybody's going to have one. It's going to be the most common computing device, if you define it that way. Yes. Okay. But when I think about, like, getting work done, and it's different for different people, but I need a bigger screen. That's bottom line. I need a bigger screen. Now, maybe the future is touch screens that are driven by your smartphone. Maybe that's it, right? That it's not an iPad anymore. It's not a Mac anymore. You've got an incredibly powerful smartphone. And then when you're at a desk or a table, you can drive that screen. And it's the brains are all in the smartphone. Maybe that's the future. Yeah. Instead of having, you know, a computer here and a tablet here and a laptop and a smartphone here. Maybe that's the case. But for me, that's the thing. The pure ergonomics of it is, unless we all switch to VR or something like that, that's the problem I have with it. And that's why I use a tablet. I don't use a tablet because I think the iPhone is dumb. I use my iPad because it's got a 13-inch screen on it, and so there's lots of room for stuff and multiple apps and my hands to gesture on it. And that's, to me, that's the big question. It's like, okay, but surely there is a touch interface that is larger than an iPhone 7 Plus that people are going to want to use at some point.
Well, and even, frankly, without even being a touch surface, I mean, you know, if I want to sit down, I don't want to write on an iPhone for several reasons, not including, I mean, even if I hook up a Bluetooth keyboard to it, you know, a la the old Palm keyboards.
Oh, like, yeah, good times.
I'm getting older. My eyes are not what they used to be. It is not fun to write stuff, you know, on a little tiny screen. I want a bigger screen for that. And whether that's something like what you're talking about, or some sort of way that the screen is expandable or unrollable, you know, like there's all these things, crazy things people are working on, right? Like it's not hard to imagine that they would come up with a way that your smartphone can convert to a large screen thing, but that's a ways off right now, I think. So I agree, right now there are multiple devices that serve different purposes, and, you know, whether those things turn into convergence, you know, into a single device, which has been one of those things people have been pushing for a long time, but of course now I feel like we've splintered off again with the advent of the smartphone. Well, it remains to be seen exactly how that's going to play out, but I'm glad nobody's taken my MacBook Air or my iPad from me insisting I use a smartphone.
A mean man has not come and thrown your iPad to the ground yet.
Not yet. Could happen.
All right, well, thanks to everybody out there again for being a Six Color subscriber. We appreciate you. And Dan, I appreciate you too. This was a nice conversation, as always.
Appreciate you too, Jason. Always a pleasure to have our little chats.
Bye, everybody.
Our little chats. Bye, everybody.
Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.